And it's the Dice to Screen podcast coming at you again. Oh, we return. That was a nice roar.
Been saving it up?
Yeah. Have I got a lot to roar about?
I bet. Yeah, we do. It's been a week, so we're back, and I'm Randy.
I'm Mike.
And we are recording. Yeah, we're here, and we're doing it. So today we're going to be talking about Helldivers 2, a video game, some of the legacy, and some of the miscues, I guess, maybe you could say, from Heinlein's legacy. Where yes. They got right and what maybe they got wrong.
Well, and it's not just Heinlein's legacy, but I mean, you know, Helldivers 2.
The Starship Troopers movie could be definitely Paul Verhoeven.
Look, we will be looking at the clear connections between Helldivers. And
just not the connective tissue.
Heinlein, but also the phenom of the game itself.
Right.
Some of the challenges it has faced and its triumphs. Which are pretty impressive. Like, it doesn't happen every day like this. It's great to see one of the non-AAA companies hit one out of the park. So, like, three cheers for the underdog.
Oh, yeah, and it looks like it's definitely going to be sustainable. So, yeah, we'll look for that in the second half, but starting out here.
Expect no less from the plump German children of gaming podcasts.
Right. I was going to go with the low stat pre-gen with a plus one longsword. You may not want to have, you know, I'm a fighter with 13 strength. Well, you have a plus one longsword. Well, you're kind of talking my language there.
Well, we're perpetually lost in the forest. That house looks nice and that oven looks very warm. That's us.
Well,
anyway, I see no way in which this could possibly end badly.
Hey, you know what? You have we had a week off. We have two different what takes. Pick your favorite one and tell us on the poll. We'll put it up there later. And speaking about that, we got some other announcements. So we're going to be holding court on Discord. Events will be on our Facebook page. We'll be starting up a Discord server here like everybody else should. Yeah, we're like
technically
5 years ago. Congratulations, Boomer, for figuring out what Discord is. Yeah, I've been on Discord for quite a while. Just never thought that this podcast would have any audience of it. But
I'm joining the advanced era. I'm purchasing a phone.
Oh. Well, I'm glad to hear about that.
I'm sorry. I'm kidding. I'm finally breaking into advanced telegraph technology.
Semaphore?
Yes.
Oh, or carrier pigeon.
Or carrier pigeon. Yes. Yes, carrier pigeons. Way for the future, I tell you, bro.
You know, people are just going to have pigeon coops all over the city, you know. We're going to make a bundle.
Oh, man. Yeah, it is what it is. But, yeah, Discord. It's already been happening a little here and there. I have not been able to engage because I go to bed far too soon and get up, like, at an almost inappropriate hour of the morning. And that has precluded having any kind of evening participation. So
what we're going to do is, instead of asking people, when's going to be the best time for you, is invoking the scheduling beast, the hardest monster in D&D.
Yeah.
We're just going to probably put it on about 7 p.m. Central or Standard Time, whatever you come on, wherever we fall in, I mean. And Mike can make it on Saturdays. So we'll be there for about an hour or two. We'll have the Discord server voice chat enabled. And, you know, if you want to show your ugly mug, then yeah, you can do that too.
Oh, wow.
But, Discord. We have it all. We'll have it all. And
Discord can do faces?
Yes. Yeah. They have a computer on the internet, too.
I thought that was just a vocal thing on Discord.
No, you can do live. Or you can just leave your screen blank if, you know,
cool. You're
in your jammies and, you know, you're all got your Cookie Monster onesie on eating Xanax.
I'll show off the kimono.
No, all right, great.
Kidding.
Don't. Just, no. You know, hey, you know what? It could be that kind of server, but no. That's for your OnlyFans account. So you just keep it on that one. Don't spoil your content because, sir, you may have a great package.
I'm not going to dress up for you people. I mean, you're lucky you're going to get Hawkeye Pierce. It's me in a bathrobe and a cowboy hat with a cocktail.
Apparently, we'll have to have a discussion after the podcast about how to use Discord. Yes,
yeah,
you can show up if you want. You are not required to show video chat. So that's at you, Mike, but also any of our listeners that also may be unfamiliar. You can just basically, you know, throw whatever nondescript avatar or no avatar appearing default icon that comes on it and just, you know, ramble on or listen to us ramble on, whichever it is. So basically, you'll be getting a bonus episode along that. And it's all free, not going to have a community guideline or buster, but you will have to PM us through Facebook or send us a message through Facebook. I just use PM. Yeah, you're going to have to leave us a message on Facebook, and we'll send you the information with your, just send us your Discord ID, and we'll set that up. All right. So that all said and aside, that's something we'll be looking forward to help build a community, because we've had a couple people come in and talk to me online when I am in. So we'll start inviting some of our fans, so if you're interested. All right, so yeah, that pretty much does it. I think it's time for a roundabout news around what's going here on lately. And well, we've got a couple things to do. First of all, I would like to say that our anime episode landed a lot better than I thought. I was very trepid about this episode, but it had a lot of love and first causes in it, and we like to talk about that here on the Dicey Screaming.
So. And despite what some folks may think, it is, you know, gaming related. There are, you know, anime-driven role-playing games that hit tables at cons, which is where I encountered one. The game Big Eyes, Small Mouth, which was very silly, fast-paced, lighthearted, simple rule system, very approachable. And it's still, you know, out there in the realms of gamers. But, yeah, I do have some fond memories.
Well, sure, but, you know, the whole idea of the
aspect. It was not a thing I thought I'd like. That's why I still had the fond memory, is because I went into it going, like, I know this is just going to be idiotic. It was not. I had a great time.
Well, the historian on me, it celebrates the fact that, you know, a lot of these things, like comic book shops, game stores, they all kind of came into being roughly from the same sort of era where direct comic sales allowed manga to be imported in, first of all. And then, more importantly, anime was carried in, and then the VHS explosion and all that happened, which allowed, you know, more carried a demand for more content, and it was carried in. But it was driven by like a Venn diagram of three diverse group of people that had adjacent interests. And so I think we did that really well. And I like that people responded to it positively. That said, there's probably an episode or two I could do on some adjacent stuff, like Richard and Wendy Penny, ElfQuest, how that she was a otaku fangirl of the First Order, and also some other things. But those were episodes for later. So we're just going to wrap it up and say thanks for everybody for your support and listening to us on that one. And we promise that we will be getting to more direct gaming support. So taking fate into my own hands, I grab the dice from the Astrogalomancer, and I will gaze into my own fate. Oh, my goodness, that's terrible. Double ones. All right, so I'm dead. I'm getting a vision. It's overcoming me. It's it's combat through the editions of D&D. Yeah, you want it, you got it. Here's some old school stuff. I actually managed to get a Gander. Did I use Gander right? Yeah, I sure did.
Good for the goose.
That's right. Of the very first copy, the first draft of the original D&D script. And it started me thinking that how combat has changed and yet remained the same. So basically, if you want to listen to two old farts who've done it all through almost every edition, yes, we'll even make a uncomfortable and some slightly awkward appeal to the fourth edition. We hear you out there. And talk about some of the things, how combat has changed, and also how it's been more, it's now more of a narrative device than it is a direct resolution or simulation. You know, the very early editions of D&D were more of a simulation nature. And now the current editions are more of a narrative. You know, combat is a means to an end. Whereas before, that was pretty much it. You know, you didn't have a whole lot of other things going on. So look forward to that in our next episode, Combat to the Editions of D&D.
Yeah, there have been some remarkable changes over the decades. Okay, things the way in which things are approached and the way in which things are resolved and the role that combat even plays. All of it has changed in...
Like, yeah, weapon speed, moving from weapon speeds and adjusted to hit base armor class.
Spread across 5 decades. Oh, man.
And now we're at feats and various combat modifiers, advantage, disadvantage, all that.
Feats don't fail me now.
Yeah. So I said, all right. But also, we must now go to, it's been 0 days since an incident of corporate embarrassment has happened. We have to reset the days marker. And
oh, Hasbro Watsy, why do you hurt us so?
Well, more, how do they hurt themselves, though? I mean, this is more, we said, we were going to really go on there and something was newsworthy. Well, they hurt us, and so, hey, you guys need some more content to mine? Speaking of content to mine. Yeah, Chris Cox, if you hadn't catched, had an interview at the tail end of the interview. You can see it. I've got it linked, and I'll link it on our profile as well, on our Facebook page, the Dice is Screaming. Basically stating their intentions to use AI in the future going forward and using the fun words that we like to all hear is words that we own and we can leverage and content that we create and can mine. I'm literally kind of like get rubbed up over the fact that he says that he hasn't created anything, but he's the, for better or for worse, he's the captain of the ship at Hasbro right now. So he's running, he's at the till, whatever that boat is headed, whatever you allegory you can use for a ship or a vessel that they're on.
Yeah, I think the big objection was, we've created, and I know that this is the royal corporate we, where, it's a statement about, as a company, this company has created all these things, and we are the current incarnation. I know how it's intended, but it's still a poor choice of words, because the current generation have really created nothing. I mean, they've been milking the teat of the same 100-year-old cow, and the now, the most recent inclusion has been the 50-year-old cow of D&D. Y'all have just been milking that teat for all it's worth. No actual creation of anything has been involved for that upper echelon. You don't create anything. You just come there and seemingly have stewardship over a period of profitability for the things that other people created for you. It strikes the ears wrong, okay? The attitude strikes the ears wrong. Although part of that could just be because it's coming out of the mouth of somebody who is...
They're not speaking to the customer. They're speaking to the investors and shareholders. They're going, look at this new thing that AI can do to increase our profitability.
It's Chris Cox. We've just come to expect this at this point. But, it may be that I am too hard on these people in the sense that, I'm filled with suspicion. But I'm sorry. I just can't seem to turn that off. I was waiting for another shoe to drop, and we'd had, we've had a little quiet time. It's been this many days with no accidents. I was enjoying that, but
and
I
just
never...
backed the forklift into the racks and knocked them all over.
This is what I was expecting, and it's what I was waiting for. And it's really at the heart of why I haven't
just one good stat.
I haven't pushed to review any of WOTC's products in a while, because as much as I enjoyed them, I will be watching what they do in the future and examining product to be alert and aware of what is coming out in gamerdom. But they've really tapped out my enthusiasm.
It does kind of take the wind out of your sails about, hey, I'm looking forward to something great happening. And they keep doing this. And hey, look, I'm kind of going to counter on that when you say that they haven't done anything. I mean, they have created some nice content for 5th edition. I mean, Rime of the Frost Maiden is pretty good, but that's my personal favorite. What is one I've had to read from a loaned copy, but at the same time, You know, I'm a poor customer for Wizards. They're making the case of boycotting because I don't buy anything of them, and probably after this, not. I double now won't buy anything. I can't Michael Scott that without.
Well,
embarrassing
yeah, I mean, you've got no dog in that fight. It's like, yeah, what do I lose by saying no to this? You're like, you don't really lose anything. I, on the other hand, I mean, it's a tough breakup. I saw a lot of product that I enjoyed, you know, over the last few years, especially prior to 2023, you know, going back to 2022, 2021, 2020, like even back to 2018, I was in a pretty good place and I really liked what I was seeing.
Oh yeah. We had fun reviewing a couple of products you brought. So I didn't,
yeah.
Look, I don't.
And they really soured that.
The developers, the writers, the artists, those are the ones I feel bad for.
Yeah.
Because
they created great stuff.
Chris Cox keeps hurting themselves, those people, and laying them off.
Yeah. I can't wait to get rid of them. Well, and at the core of this most recent flap is Mr. Cox's insistence, which, I mean, it was really, I get that it's signaling investors that we're making thoughtful investment in future AI technology. But what everybody actually hears, like the translator ears from corporate buzzspeak down to what does it mean for real humans, is we're frantically attempting to please our investors by finding ways to generate product and profit without actually having to employ or pay anybody. And it is totally going to involve just rifling through everything else we have ever done using an AI tool so that we're not responsible to actually, you know, homage or respect or reference any of the previous creatives that have been involved in this process.
Yeah, because
so we're just going to strip mine all their goodies and then say it's our genius for using AI. That's what most of us hear. And, you know,
yeah, particularly galling as he started with some good things saying that they were going to honor the legacy and work of the other people, and then proceeds, as Mike said, to strip mine it for just the raw data. So you'll end up with Ghost Tower of the Lost Dark Sun Princess. I mean, that's what they're going to try to do. I know that it will probably be less crass than
smoother than that. I mean, because...
But that's the easiest way I can...
Look, the only human in the process will be the one who, like, rejects or cleans up. You're like, okay, it got really close. All I have to do is fidget with this a little and we can run this. You know, that's... Like, the last person left in the building is going to be the AI post-creative inspector. Okay, I'll just, you know, like, just fix enough of this, because it was awfully close. I mean, oh, boy.
Yeah, Merle's 2000 will be running the show. You know, it'll be this big humming device in a secure facility, and, like, I'm sorry, I can't do that, Dave. Well, I would just like my character to look for a flask. Look for a flask, Dave.
I just realized that by the time Chris Cox is done with this, you know, like it's just going to be cranking them out like Chuck Tingle novels. You know, it's banged in the adventure by my own adventure. What the hell?
I don't even understand what the meta is on this anymore. You've lost me.
Yes,
but anyway, yeah, I'm sure. Come for the meta, stay for the smut. Oh, what? Oh, wow. No, thank you.
Yeah.
Hard pass.
I just don't see good things coming.
Yeah.
It's not a fun moment.
And some other people like Owen Casey Stevens says adroitly that he's not talking to the customer. He's talking and always talking to the investors. That's for subordinates to take care of. That's it. It's like, this is damage control. Any damage caused to the community by this will be handled by subordinates. I'm sure there will probably be another obligatory apology tour by Turley down in the mailroom. Send him out. You know, you'll go out and make him go out and do it. So, hey, you know, Watsy, if you're listening, you want to send out Bob over there to come over and talk to us. No, we're just not. Just don't bother. It will not be enjoyable, but we have to say. We'll come prepared with questions on index cards. I have multiple questions. You should. All right. So kind of writing it up. Yeah, we didn't want to spend too much time on it, but yeah, that happened. And again, you know, like we had a conversation before. Look, I'm just trying to stay out of it, but gosh darn it, they just make it so darn hard to have a quiet time. Can we just enjoy the community for what it is? And can you guys just not keep throwing fire in it? But
well, we got a few good weeks in before they screwed this up. I actually thought it would be much swifter, that they would like screw the pooch as quickly as possible and be like, hey, any coverage is good coverage. Doesn't matter if like we look terrible, the optics are crap, but hey, they're talking about us. Like, that is not good. Get real PR. Did you fire those people too? I know you fired all the people who actually created the modules and all the other stuff, but like you might have looked better while doing it if you had not also ignored the PR people or threw them out the window.
Yeah.
I mean, is AI handling that for you too? Because I got to tell you, it's not working.
Yeah. Well, all hail Merle's 2000. I'm sorry.
Banging the adventure by my own adventure. I'm sorry.
Well,
I know it's crass to crack myself up, but I don't even know where that came from. Like,
it's a Chuck Tingle thing. So if you don't know who Chuck Tingle is, don't.
Yeah.
Do not look it up. If you are that innocent, my sweet summer child, keep your innocence. The winter is not yet upon you. Yeah. All right. And so talking about Sweet Summer Child, we're going to talk about something else here that happened, which was Daggerheart. We've been looking forward to Critical Role's role-playing game.
Now and for happy news in gaming.
They got the beta out. It's for free. It's lengthy. It's like some almost 400 pages, 397 or something. Cool. Yeah, it's huge. So they didn't just give you like, okay, here's a 12-page preamble on the rules and style of play, and here's 4 pages of a slapdash adventure we put on. No, this is not a...
This is as close to the finished product as they could possibly get.
Well, it's up to the beta, which will be out in softback here, short in Gen Con.
Yeah.
But you can also get it through DriveThruRPG. So it's for free.
I mean, even calling it a beta is almost inaccurate at this point because it is a full playable
version. Well, it's the playtest. It's the playtest, just like Pathfinder had when they went from first edition to second edition, they had a playtest. And when they went first release, they had a playtest that was very lengthy and meaty. But there were many changes. There are some things that I like. There's a lot of things I like, first of all. But I'm going to say that there are some things I don't like. But that's for another time. What we're going to talk about.
Yeah, we'll do a proper examination after all of that has had some time to sink in for us, because I have not examined the content on this. I'll be looking at PDFs and watching reviews and attempting to parse out some stuff. But
that they came out on their recent episode, and I was like, I don't know if they're going to really switch over from D&D to Daggerheart.
We were all wondering.
Yeah.
Well, hell, the answer has finally become clear. Yes, they are.
Yes, they are, because in their premiere of this, they have right in the middle of their episode this week, they had Travis and Matt Mercer converting their current characters from 5th edition to Daggerheart and showing how easy it is.
Yeah, and if you think that that happening in the middle of the episode was an accident.
Well, usually they have fan art and some advertisements and stuff, but they spent a small portion of that time going over that. Yeah, that's a warning shot across your bow. I mean, first,
we all understood that was, I know you may have doubted that they were going to go that far. I didn't actually doubt that because... Mm-hmm. The same rules are still in effect as last year, which is it was only a question of time and how long would it take people to be ready to undertake the steps they started planning last year, which is to get away from a very toxic property, legally speaking, that it may not happen this year. You may not have a problem with them this year. You may not have a problem with them next year or 5 years from now. But the day will come when, with a very toxic leadership mentality, WOTC/Hasbro tries another thing.
Yep.
Being there, it being legally bulletproof, we got nothing you can touch. That's the place that people want to be. And
And when you hear that directly, and this is a direct quote, words we own and can leverage from Chris Cox in that AI discussion we're talking about, that boondoggle that he did. That, if you wonder why, like, the remaster happened and why Tales of the Valiant is skinning off all the legacy content from D&D 5th edition as they make their own 5e adjacent product.
Yeah.
And Daggerheart is doing now. That's why, because they say words, like words we own and can leverage.
Yeah. You know, that, what do people think the leverage means? Which, you know, it's about clicks, it's about money, and it is about IP control. So, I don't want to sound unrealistic in a hippy dippy way, like, oh, nobody should like own anything, man. Okay. Okay, I get that, but you don't understand the symbiotic relationship between the creative hobby that makes this a viable product and your material ownership. If you come from a place that is not gaming and you enter into it, everything's all black and white, like, we own this IP, and like, but if you have no passion for it, no connection to it, and you literally know nothing about the customer base, then yeah, of course you've screwed it up.
Well, now, you also, if you had a community built with that.
We have all these terrific, you know, people that, well, when the WOTC / Hasbro ship began to sink, the rats of gaming, you know, ran down the lines, you know, running off the anchor ropes and headed for shore. But they're out there building their own ships. Like, I guess we're just going to have to start over. But it amounts to a freaking fleet. So, you know, I do feel like Renaissance 2 Electric Boogaloo, another great moment in gaming, could be in the offing.
You know, I'm going to advocate that Electric Boogaloo 2 be excised from our lexicon nowadays, because that's just such a ring, ring, hello. Yes, the 80s are calling. They'd like their catchphrases back. Yeah. Who has watched that movie in the current era? That's, if you have, you know, it's because you're a cinephile, and that's your own curse.
Oh, by the way, on the podcast, before we wrap up for the half hour, on the podcast, Podcastination Unknown, which an old, wonderful friend of mine, Brian Ramalas, you know, his friend Devin, and oh my gosh, how could I forget her name? Well, anyhow, the three people who do that podcast is about horror and horror movies. They had a fantastic interview with a insider who was in special effects work and props and a lot of the you know, things that you would see in movies that are visually impressive and that were physical effects as opposed to CGI effects. I believe it was Rick Strawn.
Okay.
Now, point being, it's a great show, Podcastination Unknown. And they referenced, he worked on Electric Boogaloo. Okay.
Well, great.
He worked on Breaking 2. Along with like scores of other movies. A very busy man.
Well, yeah.
Amazing career.
But yes, it would suffice to say that if our connection is that close to Electric Boogaloo, I'm going to assert that our adjacent rock music allegories be included twice in a podcast as mandatory requirements. I slip them in when I can, but, you know, if that's you, you're going to miss the boat on all those juicy Rush and Pathfinder analogies and RuneQuest Led Zeppelin adjacent things, along with, you know, Warhammer Fantasy, Judas Priest. So,
hey, if I'm down to only being able to reference modern music, I'm done. That's it.
Oh, well, I am. That's what I am. So if that's your jump off point, stick with the Boogaloo. But we at the Dice is Screaming like to have both. So you'll get a double dose of Electric Boogaloo 2 content and bad rock gaming analogies. All right, so we're going to take a brief break and we'll be back with content after this. All right, we're back, and hey, it's talking about Helldivers 2. Yeah, we've been waiting on this one, so maybe you have too. If you haven't, well, yeah, here's your exit ticket. Click off. And go listen to better podcasts like Destination. What was it?
Podcastination Unknown.
All right. Sorry.
Episode 3 includes Mr. Strawn. And as Brian, and if this gives you an indicator of what, you know, Brian's hosting is like, he's long, he's strong, and he's about to get his friction on. That was his intro for his guest. Yeah, I loved it. Brian is a great entertainer. Puts the rest of us to shame. He's a natural and a good interviewer. Mm-hmm. So in our case, we're talking Helldivers 2, which...
Yeah, it's all the rage among the kids these days. I wonder what's going on in there. So here, merrily aging Gen Xers, take a look at what is new in gaming. And before we get too far in this, I'm just going to preface this with a couple of things. People have been saying, hey, you guys have been pretty far afield these days. Can you do some other stuff? And like, okay, well, look.
We are drifting back towards the gamer proper curve, but we are like putting the landing... you know, gear down.
The lights are on.
And the lights are on. We just wanted to hit this topic this week because this is a very current sensation in popular gaming online. And it's got a connection to the science fiction and fantasy stuff that we love. And further, it's also an example of a non-AAA, you know, one of the smaller companies hitting exactly the right note at exactly the right moment. It's an amazing success story. And
Arrowhead Studios went from what, Helldivers 1, they went from about 7,000 some odd, downloads and a small, but dedicated community. I mean, people who like small games like that, they tend, just like a cult movie, you know, they form a very tight knit community.
Yeah. You like, going to see a Rocky Horror Picture Show, you know, at a local theater at midnight. Right. And you're like, you know, you get your fishnets on.
Well, I don't know if we'd go that cult movie. I was talking more of crazy with it, MST3K cult movies.
But Helldivers, it had a small, dedicated
community. Yeah, it had a nice little community. And of course,
I'm sure they expected some success. They just could never have projected this.
Well, look, you know, you always start with just making the best content you can.
Yeah.
And sometimes, if you're lucky and the stars align, you go viral, and that's just how it is. And so they hit a nerve with this one, and you know, their level 5 democracy carrier came into view and fired some 406mm freedom rounds and right into the middle of it. And yeah, so Helldivers 2, a larger and more robust game that has a huge amount of support and work behind it that you would expect from a AAA studio like EA.
Yeah, you would have thought that a much larger outfit put this together.
And it's mindless fun killing bugs and automatons that seem like their entire purpose is just there to be wiped out. And you can do that. But there is a lore behind that. It is adjacent to some of our talks about...
a fabulously subversive lore.
That where some people are still fighting over the meaning of Starship Troopers from Robert Heinlein. And that's what kind of clued me in on this. Like, somebody's having a conversation about missing the point of Robert Heinlein. I mean, yeah, he would never concretely come out and say what his intentions were, or was he writing an ode to fascism or some people after his death? And this is where I...
he rebutted
read the book. But some people after his death have also raised the idea that he was a conservative. And yeah, take anybody 50 years removed from their element. Their viewpoints are going to seem conservative, but more to the point...
Yeah, look at the social conservatives of that time, though, and you will quickly discover that he was a firebrand compared to the staid traditionalists of his time period. So, yeah.
Did he have some problematic views on notions of sex, sexuality, and other things like that, where some of those characters that were... self-inserts were doing some stuff. Yeah, so there's some schizoid sort of things going on there. But rather than focus on that, we wanted to focus on the narrative of the Starship Troopers and how it gets missed by a lot of people and misinterpreted. And of course, there is no correct interpretation. It is what you bring in and what you take out with you from after reading that book. And while it is not a, like... a cornerstone like Wittgenstein or Kant.
Oh, God.
philosophical and okay. Sociological.
Yeah, it's not like essential reading in the sense of like I intend to pursue a degree in philosophy. No.
This is not a moralistic or societal take. Now, it does have a conversation starter, and I think that's where the narrative is. And I think that if you see some allegories to certain things that we've done, some of our justification of our involvement in Vietnam and other countries, and you hear that coming regurgitated out of a book written before any of these things happened, because it was written in the 50s.
Yeah.
People, that's why it's important to me that, yeah, I grew up of Vietnam era, but I heard a lot of these justifications repeated, and I'm like, wow, this is very similar to stuff I had heard growing up. And now, you know, to a whole new generation, they're discovering this. I think that's important to have, whether they agree with our interpretation or my personal interpretation. I have a particular one. I think that Haman was trying to prove that a narrative of a community of forged of people forged out of a commonality of experiences makes them more adaptable to being decisive in a government that is better for everybody in the long term. A government that serves its members as well as be served by its members was the core element. But of course, like everything, it can be misconstrued and taken in bad ways.
Well, yeah. Also, just the concept of it as a form of service, as opposed to a form of, like, I have been granted total power! Which is, you know, his rebuttal of that is that people who have spent a lifetime of sacrifice that was personal, they had skin in the game, would make better decisions, more thoughtful decisions, than people who have nothing on the table that is at risk for them. Like, all of you are chess pieces, but they don't even own the board. Like, they're just like, I don't care about that. I have so much wealth, so much power, so much clout. None of this means anything to me. I'll be fine, even if I destroy all of you by accident. Whereas somebody who, like, yeah, I've been the tip of the spear that is used when you make a decision, when you make a mistake. I have been the people who pay that price and who suffer for that. Because I have been that, I will make choices that are more thoughtful than the person who is not. You know, there's some great merit in there, just throwing it out there. And I'm not, you're not going to find me being wildly pro-militaristic, but, you know, Haneland wove that into the narrative and people like immediately get bristly, because like,
he does talk about the idea of fascism, and we can have a serious discussion of fascism without getting all hairy about it by saying that fascia, the root of the word, was a Roman way of saying that as together we are stronger than we are singly.
Yeah.
Like we are a bundle.
And of course, like the 20th century fascists, of course, picked up on that and wanted to lend themselves the inheritance of like classic concepts without actually living up to any of them.
Yeah, the obligation of...
Yeah.
the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
You know, that...
And also the few... are also a part of this. So if you don't serve the less or the least, then you are not providing service at all. And yeah. Those conversations are hard to have. Everybody remembers the first part, but they forget the last part of that is also if you do not serve the least, then you remove one at a time, each part of this bundle, and it becomes weaker. So you have to strike a balance. That's what it's about. But nonetheless, yeah. In this game, they provide a atmosphere that Starship Troopers would feel gloriously at home in, which is...
Yeah, it's a huge...
for Starship freedom! Starship
Troopers and, StarCraft and,
Well, yeah, we'll get into the 40K and Warhammer type, but 40K. Let's move on to the...
All of these things have gone into the soup that has made this terrific game, Helldivers. They have drawn from the very best in, you know, science fiction warfare to bring to the table Helldivers, its core focus is combat against bugs and automatons that are both menaces to, you know, human safety in the universe, or rather I should say human dominance of the universe. And as it turns out, lore-wise, the humans have not classically been really good to the machines or to the bugs.
So, well, yeah, you learn.
But there may be some reasons.
But let's talk about the game itself.
It unfolds as you play.
Right. So that the lore seems to, for a lot of people, you can just have great fun blowing up bugs and shooting up robots. So
yeah.
Nobody really would tend to think too much about it, but they've included a lore that we'll cover in a minute. But to get into the point, what is Helldivers? Well, it's a multiplayer platform game that's more or less first person, or in this case, the second person shooter, providing you with a large aspect of leveling, gear grinding, as well as raid-like experience, which is the hell dive. If you want to experience a hell dive, then you have to go in as a hell diver, which, you know, is the name of the game. But it's a raid environment where you're with 60 other people trying to achieve objectives, whatever that is of that particular raid. But the community, rather than being usually hostile, is extremely friendly to people rather that are just experiencing this for the first time. Like, oh, you need some more better weapons and gear, we'll help you grind up and get that. This is what you do. There's a lot of people who will just start instances and lesser hell dives to help other people and explain the fights, how they unfold, and that kind of community.
There does seem to be a distinctive welcoming sense to the Helldiver community. And I got to say that, like, as much as you would expect, if this is your first night at Helldive Club, you have to Helldive. There's a little dash of that too, but it's with the welcome and support of other people to help you work out the particulars and develop a style of play that is going to be effective, as opposed to, you suck, get out, you know. Which is so many other MMORPGs.
Right, and another one of them is like Call of Duty now may have gotten PvP, right? Because that's what you wanted to do. You wanted to fight other players. You know, it's team versus team, whether you're the British versus the Germans or Italians versus the Japanese. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
You were playing a team sport. So ostensibly, the expectation is you're going to work with your team, and then, of course, fragging your own team members is a form of griefing that results in trolling, which is like, yeah, I totally threw a grenade on purpose on you. You know, I brought a sniper rifle and shot you in the back of the head. Oops, I'm just trying to aim at somebody right past you, and I missed. Oops.
Yeah, moved. Basically, somebody emptied a junior high locker room into a gaming experience, and... You know, even including the smell of dirty socks, you know, just it's
in modern warfare
and others, bad lunch and acne all over again.
Have picked up on that. And so there's a type of player known as the griefer. And sometimes they're overt and sometimes they're not so overt. They don't find a place in Helldivers 2 very often. First of all, the game is not meant to be a PvP environment, player versus player. And when there was a call for it on the servers, the owner and several devs immediately said, nope, that is not our intent. If you want to play a PvP game, there are other platforms to do this. We're going to maintain the integrity of a team build, which is the idea of the Helldivers, as they are all working together for the benefit of humanity and for freedom.
Yeah, this is a big squad approach, okay? Much like World of Warcraft raids, but, you know... They have honestly thought this out, that how do we keep the game's focus on a mutual experience that will leave people wanting to come back and play again? And having that like kind of foresight in mind, like it's not just, well, look, we already got their like X amount of money per month or something like that. We don't owe them shit. That mentality, on the other hand, has destroyed games. And I feel like the cats over at Arrowhead, they did their homework. They asked themselves, what do gamers actually want? What makes them happy?
Or,
and they seem to
we have a focus.
Struck the perfect zone.
They had an idea, and they did not stray from that. And to keep, you know, normally people would say, well, your player base is calling for this large vocal group, and as they probably learned that the vocal groups are not really that large, they're just loud, and so the loudest voices in the room get noticed first, and they tend to take you in sometimes
Fartbot 37092 agrees with Fartbot 37093 and 39704, and just
it's all about farts.
Whoa. You should totally do this. We all agree. There's thousands of us. You need to know that. It's five dudes who just hate life.
Well, they have a certain idea that they want to go on. And it, look, there's many games that they can do that.
Yeah.
But griefing is really not allowed. You get you quickly learn that you will not prosper in the community. And they actually have tools for reporting griefers rather than just kind of like half-assedly.
Is there a mod available at this moment? You know.
Oh, yeah, you just report this guy. You know, this is what killed, from in an adjacent game, it's what killed Fall Guys from my life, is that the griefer reporting tool was not very good.
Fall Guys. I didn't know that one.
Is a game. So, anyway, but we're talking about Helldivers 2 on that one. And also coming out and saying that directly that they had several issues with the server space.
Yeah, which I'm forgiving about that scenario because based on their previous level of success, which was not amazing, but it was, you know, sufficient. They had a reasonably successful game. They had a small-ish but dedicated niche of players. Their projection was that, you know, like, they would need some more server space, and they certainly prepared for that. They could not have actually predicted that they were going to be kind of 2024's mega hit. And the end result of that is that they had a lot of server crash, a lot of server space shortage issues, and you know, things of that nature, which a good problem to have, because they did not expect like the entire internet to show up knocking at the door. Hey, I heard about this from another dude, and I want to try this out. And it was everybody. So like, you open your door for a house party and like the entire block is lined up.
Well, right. That combined with a low entry cost of about $20 to $40 for the expansion. $40, I believe, is what's holding $20 for an expansion. So,
and in an era of games that in some cases charge $80 to $100.
Yeah, with the expansions that are remotely, like, it seems like something's lacking in the base part of this game. Oh, well, if you think that's lacking, then buy our DLC. Oh, it's yeah. Like you already had this content planned out.
I spent $70 for the bare minimum portion of the game.
And you needed now a way to milk me another $30. Okay.
Like $20 at a time, you're going to ding me. I'll be in $150 before I have what constitutes a game worth about $60. That has driven a lot of gamers right away from the AAA studios. So, yeah, the Chris Cox-inspired marketing techniques of the mid-2000s and why they suck. This is why that guy's head is still in the dirt.
Well, Cynthia Williams, more appropriately, we need to monetize everything. But anyway, the point is that the meta of that preamble was basically set up the next stage, is that this is the approach of the game holistically, that they want you to be playing in teams and squads with clear defined objectives that you can optimize with your solo gaming experience. You can play as either cooperatively or solo. And if you want to have a pairing system like the complaints that we were just adjacently talking about, to give them a little bit more clarity, people were saying like, hey, I want to play with my friends. I want to do this more in conclusive, like build a guild system more, or a clan system, whatever you want to call it. And they didn't have that function right off the bat, but they were, of course, adjacently doing it. It was hard to do that. So basically, they said, hey, create your private server. Go private and then play with your friends that way if you need to. But we can't guarantee that people will get matched up properly in the same games just by queuing at the same time. And so understanding that there was a high degree of coding that had to go into this, the president also came out and said, look, I can stand. Why aren't you fixing these and addressing our problems and concerns so we can actually have a clan system? Other games seem to do this. And he's like, right. And so I could sit behind my developers and ask, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? And see how well that works up. Or I can just say that I'll wait for the developers to do the job and do it the right way rather than trying to just come out as fast as they can with a slapdash fix to the problem. And
yeah,
I'm hear you. We want to address these things, but we have to put, it's basically like a movie theater. We only have 200 seats. We have to fill, and we have so many people, we can only put 200 butts in the seat at the time to view the movie. And the coding for that is so, look, the fact that you can get 60 people together in the same environment, having the same experience, is still a miracle to me. Okay.
Yeah.
For a lot of people, they like, oh, well, you know, games just do that. Yeah. It's invisible. It's behind the scenes, but that takes years of coding and development.
Because we come from the era of LAN parties, which refines your appreciation for how truly awesome things are today.
Yeah. I had a whole rant on, you know, going to LAN parties, but you probably already heard it.
The first 4 hours is just plugging everything in.
Yep.
The food break is before you actually play, because by that point, you have already spent hours linking the computers up.
Oh, yeah. They say it's going to start at 6 o'clock. Yeah, it's going to start at 10, and it's going to go until about 9:30 in the morning. So
yeah.
You're going to have a 12-hour experience, but yeah, the first 4 hours is just sitting around trying to figure out, well, how in the world do I log in the server? I'm entering all the MAC components. Yeah, I had to learn, ancillary by experience how to network in. And for years, you know, like, how do you do that? I'm the router whisperer. So
I got to get out my Pied Piper pipe and just, you know, get the routers all dancing to the same tune.
Look, at Nuclear Joe's Cyber Cafe, we were playing Doom 2 multiplayer in the early 90s, and we thought that was just the bee's knees. Like, yeah. Wow, this is incredible. Look at the technology. Pretty soon we'll have the internet on computers. And yeah, we went, and then we did. It all happened rather rapidly, and that is a process that's to most people is pretty invisible.
Yeah, it was a blink for me. I basically moved to Grand Rapids, partied. Well, I moved to Kalamazoo and Grand Rapids, partied really hard, and then I finally found somebody, got into a relationship. Some time passed, okay? I was busy. And then when I had the time to stop and look around, I was like, oh my God. Like, what happened? It's only been like 5 years, and literally everything has changed so rapidly that it was stunning.
Yeah, and that just basically illustrates that, yep, we still think it's miraculous, okay? And our degree of patience is much higher for that than some other people who have grown up in that environment where this is just a thing that happens.
You have to wait an entire 30 seconds to get onto this website. Oh my God, you're upset over 30 seconds. I used to go make dinner while I waited for a single GIF to load.
Oh yeah, like downloading troops.
Oh.
Yeah, that like took a day on dial.
Yeah. You just plugged in.
Yeah, five, and it was in a zip file in three different forms. So you had to be there when one was done, and then, you know. All right, so yeah, you don't want to hear all that.
Nightmarish. Nightmarish. But we recognize the improvement in things, and watching what they have done with Helldivers shows that they've got some savvy understanding of what is the best qualities of their game. And there have been, I got to say, in defense of their leadership there, a lot of the people asking for their game to be more like those other games, they're asking the wrong question. I mean, honestly,
right,
if they were like those other games, people would not be buying it.
Right. The idea is, and this is where we're going to land the lore, is so there's all these people dying and they can just rejoin as, you know, Helldivers. They're representing the amount of casualties that are being inflicted on humanity. And every time your Helldiver dies, they represent another person who, a conscript who's went through those years of training, has now newly entered in, or not a conscript, a volunteer, and now newly enters in and experiences a horror for themselves firsthand. And that lore that they build up goes hand in hand with the play style of their Helldiver content, which is basically fighting these arachnid-like bugs that you find out are used for both fuel and food. They're rendered down, and that's why they're very upset, the psychic distress of their brethren being constantly first harvested. And it seemed like a perfectly honest way to make a living. You're just crushing bugs up for fuel and some supplemental nutritional values. But also, they were sending out psychic screams to their other brethren and causing swarms and infestations to start growing and breeding and then moving. And this would spur them into conflict with more and more greater escalation with humanity. All the while, still, you know, crushing them up and using them for fuel. And then, you know, the automatons who were drafted in, well, they weren't drafted, they were given no choice, wanted better working conditions as they became self-aware and more autonomous. And then humanity's like, no, you cannot have working condition machines. We made you do what you're told. And they're like, oh, well, we've learned this thing.
So about that.
Now the automatons are pissed off. So they're fighting a dual war, both a rear guard action and a front action. So it's, yeah, that's what it comes in. And that is ancillary to the Warhammer 40,000 StarCraft ideas. Obviously, the Zerg borrows deeply from the lore of Heinlein, which also returns back to the Tyranids from Warhammer 40,000, which were genetically altered breeders who would make very specialized warrior drones and leaders, and then semi-brain bugs, overseers to do this. StarCraft developed that in a different vein, but it was all Oths and Tyranids who just use a base model of a symbiote creature or a symbiotic creature that can be modified to whatever they want for their needs at the time, from workers and drones to advanced soldiers with their own bioweapons. And this is what that came from 40,000, which borrowed from. And so it's this weird circle. So you, like you say, one borrowed from one borrowed from the other, and then they all brung it back together. Yeah. This is where the lore really shows that this is digs deep, not only from Starship Troopers, but from Warhammer 40,000 to StarCraft, and now it's back again, and the circle has...
They have pulled from the best, okay? And it continues the tradition beautifully. we got to give it up to the guys at Arrowhead. They took it by force, and the end result has been fantastic. I like the visuals that I've seen so far. It is...
Oh, well, yeah, the weapons, the gameplay, the recoil, the flight times of the weapons and timing are all part of the game balance. There is a large portion of it which, you know, your recycle and spawn times of your weapons and your changeout times is also measured. Hey, those are things that have come from Modern Warfare and other types of first-person shooters, and it is moved throughout the whole... I guess you want to say FPS experience. I mean, again, old gamer, Quake 3, Quake 2 arenas. Switching out your weapons was instantaneous, and then somebody put in there, oh, what ruined Quake 3 for me was some of the weapons took longer to change out. There was a cooldown time, and boy, did you hear the squawking from that. But they stuck true to their guns, and so here saying that, they're doing the same thing. I like to see that. I like, okay, yeah. So there's a little
not
bit of...
everything that people ask for is a thing that they should have in a game. The first thing people, like if you've been a DM, you understand why they make the choices they do, because every DM has had the player like, well, can I have a plus 15 castle smasher that kills everything instantly so that I always win? No. Sometimes you just have to say no.
Yep.
So, yeah, we get you, Helldivers.
Arrowhead,
so, you're rocking.
Yep, that's our review of and talk about and walk around the complexities of the Helldivers 2 game. We hope you enjoyed, and of course, stay tuned for updates on our Discord, on our Facebook page, The Dice is Screaming, so look us up there. But I think that'll do it for this episode, and we're going to put a bow on it and kiss you goodbye. So we'll see you next time, folks. So until then, may the dice always roll in your favor.
We're out.
See ya.